Hey, plant friend, quick announcement at the top of the show. I wanted to let you know I'm offering two different free online classes that are 45 minutes each that are designed to help you get the most out of your spring this year. I want spring and summer 2025 to be your best houseplant growth seasons yet. And the way that you'll sign up for these classes, which are completely free, is by going to growingjoywithmaria.com/class. There's two options. The first up is the Spring Houseplant Boost. Supercharge your plant growth in three simple steps. And this is a 45-minute class all about how to utilize spring to set your plants up for insane growth this year. And then the second class is called The Ultimate Guide to Moving Indoor Plants Outside and Three Mistakes to Avoid. A lot of people move their plants outside in the spring, which is fabulous, but there are massive mistakes you can do that can result in some pretty bad stuff. So this class is going to go over how to do that. If you're interested in either classes or both classes, you can go register for free, completely free. Each class is 45 minutes at growingjoywithmaria.com/class. That's growingjoywithmaria.com/class. I cannot wait to hang out with you live and share my tips. Have you ever seen one of those viral plant hack videos online, or maybe a friend has sent one to you and you think, wait, does that actually work? Well, usually the answer is no, plant friends. I'm so sorry to report. And today we are separating fact from fiction. So buckle up. Welcome to the Growing Joy with Plants podcast, where we not only learn how to care for plants successfully, but how to simply and affordably use our plant babies to cultivate more joy in our lives by doing so. I'm Maria, former plant killer turned happy plant lady, author of Growing Joy, The Plant Lover's Guide to Cultivating Happiness, speaker, podcaster, and most importantly, your new best plant friend. On Growing Joy with Plants, you'll find conversations about houseplant care, gardening tutorials, and wellness through the lens of plants. Hello, plant friends. Welcome back to Growing Joy with Plants. My name's Maria. I'm here to help you care for plants and grow joy. And today I'm joined by a friend of mine, Derek, otherwise known as the Chocolate Botanist. He's a plant scientist and an educator, and he is all about busting myths online. So if you have seen those viral plant hack myths, Derek, who's an actual botanist, like he understands the science behind plant care, takes a lot of these videos and like demystifies them and breaks down why they actually don't work. And it's some of my favorite content of his because I feel like it really pisses me off when people show up to the internet earnestly trying to get some really good plant care information. And yet they get misled by someone who's just trying to go viral or just trying to like look fancy, even though the advice that they're giving doesn't make sense. So today, Derek and I are going through about five of the most common plant hacks or myths that we see on the internet, particularly these days on social media, and breaks down why they don't work and why you shouldn't do them. He's a delight. I can't wait for you to hear this conversation. So without further ado, let's dive in. My friend, welcome back. The last time you were here, it was Bloom and Grow Radio. So welcome to Growing Joy.
Wow, look at you cultivating a new name. I love to see it.
You know, it's like I say, it's like a fenestrated leaf. So Bloom and Grow Radio was the juvenile leaf of my brand. And now we have grown into our next iteration, our next fenestrated version. I'm so excited to have you back. It's been forever. For those of you who might not know the amazing botanist with me today, I would love for you to introduce yourself and tell us how you became the plant botanist, chocolate botanist that you are today.
Wow, such a beautiful introduction. I love to see it. So I am Derek Haynes, the chocolate botanist. I am a plant biologist graduating from North Carolina State University, and I have been the chocolate botanist for maybe 3 years, but I've been on social media botanizing since 2018. So I have been talking and chatting and planting and all types of other plant words, flowering and dirting and doing everything else.
Blooming and growing.
Blooming and growing.
And you have your degree in biology. And so I feel like when it comes to a lot of plant fluencers, a lot of people that, you know, we all follow on social media, myself included, I don't have a degree in biology. Like I'm self-taught. I'm figuring this out. But you actually come from this really esteemed degree and you have a real solid science background, which is one of the reasons why I love following you, because you can explain stuff in ways that a generic hobbyist plant book can't.
I think it's about, so when you know the information and you have a true understanding of it, in my opinion, you can explain it better than just if you don't know it and you're just Googling terms or words. So because I have a comfort with the information, and there's a lot I don't know, there's a lot I have to teach myself, but because I have a comfort with that information, I can then say, okay, I could take it to the highest academic level and then say, okay, so that means this, and still explain that high academic level where it sounds like it's down here, but it's still up here, but I'm just making it relatable. I'm making it relatable to the people.
Did you always love plants growing up? What led you to get a degree in biology?
So I have had a passion for plants since I was yet a child. Like, I can remember being 4 years old, running around the country of Vanceboro and New Bern.
Really?
Picking up all types of plants. Oh, yeah, really. It was a lot of stuff. Like, one of my earliest memories, I was 5 years old. We lived in a place called Colonial Trailer Park in New Bern, North Carolina, in the cul-de-sac that's known as Winter's Place. There was, in the trailer we had, there was this, like, old, decrepit-looking, evil stump that scared all of us kids. Like, it was, like, not even a stump, like a twig or a stick, and it just looked demonic. It was all bumpy and jagged and thorny. It looked like nothing grew. Like, it looked like when you see, like, Goosebumps or some horror movie where it's just almost like there's a fog there. Why is there fog there? It's 90 degrees outside. Where did the fog come from? But I later learned there is a native plant called the devil's walking stick, which is native to North Carolina. And that was a wild one growing behind the trailer. And it scared the bejesus out of me as a child. And that connection to plants and that deep respect, connection, entertainment I get from plants literally pushed me to be this plant biologist you see today.
In your dorm room, when you were getting your degree in biology, did you have plants? Did you have house plants?
So, you know, much to my ex's dismay, I would keep so many plants. And I was focused as a plant biologist and not like this designing horticulturalist person. It's just, I want the plants in a pot. So I didn't make beautiful pots, beautiful things. I prefer a plain terracotta pot to anything.
This is why we get along.
A plain terracotta, you know, if I do have some plastic or something, it'll be painted. I'm not really a ceramic person. I'll take them. But, and then outdoor, I do wood. But I had so many plants I would get because I went to NC State, the agricultural university. I would get many plants for free. Sure. I would get plants for free. I worked with somebody who gave me 30 orchids. They said, you could take as many as you want home. I took them all because why not? So I had so many plants. And because I had so many plants, I killed every one of them. All the plants I had in college, none of them ever survived. None of them made it. And that's what really made me say, okay, let me really figure out, more so than just buying these plants and getting in the cycle of buying and killing and buying and killing, let me really figure out what's going on and go for it, especially now that I don't have access to all those free plants anymore.
Yeah, totally. I feel like I've heard many botanists and horticulturists say that, or like professional gardeners are like, my yard is a disaster. Like, my house plants are dead. If I'm a professional gardener, like, the last thing I'm doing is spending time on my plants. So I feel like you're not alone there. You have gone viral and you've carved out this interesting niche in our space of being the myth buster, you're not scared of calling people out on their shit, which I love. It must be infuriating to be online with a degree in botany and seeing all this fake news being circulated. It's even hard for me. I don't have a degree in botany, but I can't tell you how many of my friends from home that don't have plants, they like, no, I'm a plant lady now. So they'll send me these reels that are so insane, and they'll send them to me in my DMs being like, oh, I thought you might like this. Do you do this? And I'm like, no, I don't put bananas in my soil. Like, no, I don't. What does that feel like for you to be online?
I just wanted to say, if I knew that just by wearing a t-shirt and a pair of sweatpants and doing one of these numbers in my videos all the time, that I could get people to immediately believe anything I say, I would have done that and skipped having all this crippling debt from the Department of Education.
Yeah.
You know, it's something whereas, especially because I have the information and I know stuff, that it's frustrating when I see it, but it's even more frustrating when I'm telling people, hey, so this doesn't work. And I'll have people who will send me stuff just to tell me that it does work, even though they asked me if it did. To which I'm like, why did you ask me in the first place if you were just going to tell me I was wrong? You just wanted to argue, and that doesn't work for me because all I do is win, like T-Pain said. So it is the most frustrating to see misinformation and to know that on the other end of that, there are people who are truly trying to grow plants outdoor, indoor, for food or for peace or for whatever, and they are going to drown their plants in oatmeal, banana water, and Epsom salts, and then wonder why every plant they touch dies. It's just a horrible thing, and I just wish it could stop.
It's people who are so earnest in their desire to care for plants, and they trust the wrong person online, and then they get set farther behind because someone told them to put banana water. You know, we're going to dive into this. Now, I do feel like this episode needs some sort of disclaimer or caveat as like, I know that everything we talk about today, someone is going to slide into my DMs being like, well, my grandma watered her houseplants with ice for 40 years and her houseplants are fine. That's fine. So these are common old wives' tales, myths that are out there. I am asking Derek to be here as a botanist to give his scientific opinion and to help us understand why this isn't necessarily the right idea. So once again, like you just said, we hear you. If you know, one of these is something you've practiced and it makes you happy, great. Please go live your truth, like live your best life. If you want to do any of these things, amazing. Like to each his own, it's a free country. All I want is for people to grow joy. And if that makes you joyful, great. But we both know from personal experience and from people in our DM saying, I tried this and I killed my plant, that this can cause a lot of dread. I'm like, what's the opposite of joy? This can cause a lot of stress for people. And I wanted to bring you and your brilliant mind on here to explain why a lot of this doesn't work. So we've mentioned banana water a bunch. So what I would love to do is banana water myth first. You see a lot of these reels of homemade fertilizer. You don't need to go buy fertilizer at the store. You can just take your banana peels, put them in water, stick it in the sun, and then water your houseplants with it. So maybe we should explore why this myth came to play, like why people are even talking about it, but then why it actually doesn't translate and work.
Yeah, let's get some full holistic approach. And again, there's going to be people who are going to jump in your DMs because they already jump in mine. And they're going to be like, well, my granddaddy did this. And again, a lot of these hacks, the origin of them comes from a time where people didn't have either the resources, the money, or the education, or the materials, or just the accessibility to a store to buy the stuff they needed. If you lived in the countries of New Bern back in the 60s or the 50s, there weren't going to be a ton of places where you could just go and buy the fertilizers you needed in bulk, especially depending on how much money you had to eat with. So you just used what you had to get what you needed. But that doesn't mean it was right. It was just what people did to survive. And that survival we learn from, but we just have to move forward and grow better and do better. So when it comes to banana peels, it's that same concept. You take these banana peels because, oh, I'm just going to, instead of throwing them away, I'm just going to do something with my plants. And I think the concept is that people will be like, okay, if the nutrients, I can get the nutrients out by doing X, Y, and Z. I could let it soak in water or boil it in water or do something with it in water. And then I have the nutrients pulled out. Because we've all heard about bananas being so full of potassium, which is the K in the NPK scale of the fertilizer realm, right? And when you hear other people talking about this, depending on what plant influencer you're listening to, they will say this has a gamut of nutrients and it's just chock full of them. So you just take that peel and you soak it. You soak it and it makes this slurry, or you blend it down. I've seen people feed their plant smoothie. And you blend it down and you let it sit, or you let it sit for an hour or a week, and then you feed it to your plants and it's supposed to just provide nutrition. Because it's also the mindset of what is fertilizer, but just nutrients. Food is nutrients. So if I just take this food and break it down, it's the same as fertilizer. But here's the big thing. I'm so glad you asked. I didn't think you were going to ask. I'm so glad you did. When it comes to any food, any plant absorbing nutrition, that nutrition came through some type of decomposition process. Decomposition, something was broken down. Water could break stuff down, but those nutrients aren't available to the plants in the way they would be if it was broken down through composting, which is microorganisms, fungi, bacteria, whatever, eating and breaking stuff apart, animals eating and breaking stuff apart. Manure, for example, a cow eats, poops it out, it's been broken apart. Those nutrients are freely available. They can come into the club of the plant's roots. Plant's roots are a club. That nutrition comes in, the plants are happy, it's vibing and jumping in there, and you're good. Miracle-Gro comes in, it starts throwing dollars everywhere, everything's great. Or a spoma comes in and they throw the dollars everywhere. But when it comes into the banana water isn't at the club. It can't even get in. It's at the house, not bioavailable. It's still at the house. You said banana water. I thought you said you'd be here 2 hours ago. Oh, yeah, I'm just still down the street. They're not down the street. They sleep in bed. It won't be until much longer until that nutrition becomes available. But while you're waiting, especially if you're doing this for outdoor plants, you could have somebody's pests come and negatively touch your plants. Gnats. One person told me I did banana water and my patio was covered in gnats. And I'm like, well, yeah, because you gave them the food they want. And fungal everything. Okay. I've done some of these hacks and had gnats spelling out cuss words to me. They told me, get out. This day place. So that is what happens with that banana peel water. And I know that you have people who swear by it. You say you do it and nothing happened to your plant. So it's good. Best thing in the world is just to compost it. Just compost it.
Derek and I, in this conversation, talk a lot about how much more complicated people try to make plant care. It's not complicated. And if you use Espoma Organic, they have created organic houseplant products that set you up for success. And you don't need to go use coffee grounds or go use other freaky stuff when you're using Espoma Organic because it's created perfectly for your houseplants. And that's why I'm so thankful for their long-term partnership and sponsorship of this podcast, because all of my houseplants are potted up in Espoma Organic Potting Mix. It's not that difficult, right? It's just one bag of potting mix that all of my plants can be potted up in. Now, if you want to get fancy, if you want to get a little, you know, high level, you can add in some orchid bark if you want, but like their potting mix is great for almost every houseplant, or you can use their succulent mix and their cacti mix for your succulents, cacti, citrus. Then don't be fertilizing with banana water. Just grab yourself a bottle of the Espoma Organic Indoor Houseplant Food. It's liquid organic houseplant food. You put it in your watering can. The cap is the measuring cap for it. It's so simple. Do that once a month and your plants are going to thrive. So if you want to cut through the overwhelm and cut through the confusion of all of these different plant hacks, just go with brands you know and trust. And I have known and trust Espoma Organic for so many years. So thank you, Espoma Organic, for sponsoring today's episode. You can go to espoma.com to see where your local Espoma dealer is, or you can click the link in the show notes to go to my Espoma Amazon storefront where I've curated all of my favorite Espoma products for you. Hot take, plant friends. There is no one right starter plant. There, I said it. And you know what? While I'm at it, there are also no real plant killers in the world. There are just people who have not figured out their right plants for their lifestyle. This is why I created the free Plant Parent Personality Test. Because, plant friend, I want you to get thriving alongside your houseplants as quickly as possible. So I made this cutie little plant parent personality quiz that's totally free for you on my website to take the guesswork out of building your plant collection effortlessly and joyfully. After speaking to thousands of members in our community, I realized that there are about 5 key plant parent personalities, each one with their unique set of strengths, weaknesses, and a unique set of plants that thrive under their care. For example, a mindful plant parent, someone who wants to engage with their plants daily, use them in their morning routines. If someone gifted that plant parent a succulent and they watered it every day, that succulent would die immediately. However, that drought-resistant succulent is a perfect match for a low-key plant parent, which is someone who travels, has kids, is busy, doesn't have time to engage with their plants every day. They're looking to engage with their plants more like once a week or once every couple of weeks. In addition, obviously, to understanding your light and basic plant care that we provide on this podcast, Happy Plant Parenthood is all about discovering your personality and then picking the right houseplants to go with it. It's that simple. No more stressing over your collection. So what plant parent personality type are you, plant friend? All you got to do to find out is take my free quiz on my website and let me know. You can access it at growingjoywithmaria.com/personality. After taking the test, you'll get an email with a list of plants, podcast episodes, and planty projects that I think would light you specifically up like a full spectrum grow light. So once again, that's growingjoywithmaria.com/personality for your free plant parent personality test results. Right. Because I think that's where people go. Like, because I've had people written me saying that they actually put banana peels on top of their soil. They don't even do the water, because then this one myth happens, like this one thing happens, and then it gets pulled apart on social so much that all of a sudden people are just like chopping up banana peels and putting them in the soil. I've heard that before. I feel like that thought is because, oh, my Italian grandpa used to throw kitchen scraps into the garden outdoors. And that was the old way of fertilizing. Because when you're outdoors, that food is going to deteriorate. Like basically he made a compost pile in his garden and or keyhole gardening. You know, that's being done for hundreds and hundreds of years. But the rate of decomposition outside is so much higher than the rate of decomposition. Like that banana peel is going to stay on my houseplant for 40 years, you know? And talk about the gnats and the fungus that's going to come from that. So yeah, the other thing I feel like it's important for people to understand is plants make their food with photosynthesis primarily. So like giving plants water is great because they use water to make their food. And then I don't recommend outdoor fertilizer for houseplants. I think with houseplants, you should be using a houseplant-specific fertilizer because they, once again, like absorb food differently at different rates. Like it's a whole different game indoors. Like when it comes to fertilizing, what do you recommend?
So because I'm a whole, you know, I was formerly the crazy botanist. I think the last time I was up here, I was the crazy botanist. I think I was a crazy botanist. Well, both of us went through a name change. How about the fenestrations? So when it comes to fertilizing, I use them either houseplant or a indoor plant or fertilizer, I should say, house fertilizer, indoor fertilizer, whatever fertilizer I use, I just get used what I find available to me. There's a couple of products I love that I just use interchangeably. But because my indoor plants, they still grow and can be as sometimes prolific as my outdoors because I'm grow lights. I have a little mini greenhouses over the house. I heavily fertilize. I give all types of other amendments. I treat them different, but still the same. I think the words I'm trying to say is, because I was like, oh, I'm getting caught in all my terms here. I got so excited talking about fertilizers. What I do is I use the same for everything, but I don't often recommend that for the hobbyist, the person, the beginner even, because you just want something that you can just know you're not going to mess up to ruin your plants. The amount of fertilizer you would use of a typical liquid fertilizer, again, outdoors are sometimes going to be a tenth of what you would use for indoors. You're going to use way less, way less. And I'll even tell people, typically, get a slow release because your slow releases are a little more forgiving as long as you're following the instructions on the bag. But for me, I do a lot of stuff that I don't suggest other people to do. I have slow releases I mix into the soil. I also use liquids. I use all types of stuff. My plants are growing and excited. People are like, how you do it? I don't tell them all my secrets because I got to keep some for myself. But I do all of that. But again, you're right to say outdoor and indoor is wildly different. The temperatures are different. The amount of light is different. The environment overall is just different. So you're going to treat those plants differently.
This is so funny. Your slow release is reminding me of one of my best friends who's like a very, very fancy, very well-known news reporter. Not great with plants, though. She like called me for this huge euphorbia. And she was like, I need something. I need to fertilize it. I was like, yeah, go out and get fertilizer, fertilize it. It'll be great. And she went out and got like the crystallized fertilizer that you're supposed to mix with water and sprinkled the whole bag on top of the soil, like slow release. And then bought the whole cacti. Poor guy, just like turned brown. I've certainly burned plants too with the wrong ratios for my houseplants. So that's always why I suggest just go with the houseplant fertilizer. Keep it simple. Set yourself up for success. Now we're talking about banana peel. So in the same vein, I also want to ask you about coffee grounds because people are putting coffee grounds in their houseplants. So how do you feel about that?
So I've done it. And I'm going to tell y'all, because some people will just think I'm a hater. They just think I'm just mad because these people are talking about stuff that the people need. Some people have said I'm part of the Illuminati. Some people have said some other ugly things we're not going to repeat here.
Oh, God.
But when it comes to the coffee grounds, I used to be a big proponent of using them because it was told to me or taught to me that they had so much nitrogen. There we go. They had so much nitrogen that that nitrogen would be beneficial to your plants. And I went with it. Now, who gave me this information? I can't remember.
Right, whatever.
I don't know. It was a long time ago. Maybe I saw it on Facebook somewhere. It was way beyond 20, back in the heydays of social media. And I would go to my coffee shop I don't go to no more and get all of these coffee grounds. And I started to really think about it and look into it, especially once I started dispelling these plant hacks to say, is this really something that's like giving all of my plants nitrogen? Especially with as much as I use it, you think I'd be burning plants all the time? And I started to look deeper into the science. Took me a long time. Took me some heavy reading as a plant scientist. And I had to look up some terms that I wasn't familiar with to say, oh, okay, this doesn't do what we think it does. So indoors or outdoors, when you're doing coffee grounds, it's not fertilizing your plants. You're helping your soil's microfauna, the microbial content of your soil exists. Your soil should be a living, thriving neighborhood, a populace, right? And there's all types of people around there bebopping and having fun. It's full of peace. There's not any issues, right? Everybody's happy. When that happiness is happening and you have a nitrogen source come in, your microbial populations should be able to eat that nitrogen and be able to use it for protein synthesis, basically to synthesize proteins and help them to thrive. But you don't need a lot for your indoor plants because, again, it's a different situation. In most cases, for most of you, your microbial populations of your soils are not going to be as immense as it can be for outdoors. Because outdoors, you also have wild animals who are coming around, they're pooping, you have rain coming, you have a lot of other interactions coming that are helping wind. You have a lot of other things coming and stacking it up. Earthworms, right? I have some earthworms in some of these pots. I do. But most people don't have them in their indoor pots. How did I get them in mind? Mind your business. But it happens to me. So my suggestion is typically be cautious. Be super cautious, especially if you just get your coffee grounds, you sit them in a corner somewhere in a dark room, and then you open them up and you just put them into your soil willy-nilly. Because again, you could end up getting all of these negative microbes, these negative fungi, that's the word I'm looking for, going into your soil. So I even typically take my coffee grounds after I've had them sitting for a while. I sanitize them in an old electric pressure cooker, and then I let them dry out and then use them so I don't have to worry about a lot of soil negative issues. Because if you have this thing inoculated, covered in fungi, and you don't know what that fungi is, and then you put it into your soil, and then your plants are like, what's going on here? Mother, father, why did you do this to me? And then they go downhill. You can't necessarily undo that. Sometimes you can't undo that quickly and you cannot undo it easily.
I think this also just like once again goes back to how much we overcomplicate things. Like houseplant care can be very simple. It can be getting a bag of potting mix and putting a houseplant in some potting mix in a pot and giving that plant some light and water when it needs it. But I think in this effort to like be good plant parents, right, to like do the right thing, do the best thing, people are trying to make it more complicated than it needs to be. It doesn't need to be that complicated. Hot take, plant friends. There is no one right starter plant. There, I said it. And you know what? While I'm at it, there are also no real plant killers in the world. There are just people who have not figured out their right plants for their lifestyle. This is why I created the free Plant Parent Personality Test, because Plant Friend, I want you to get thriving alongside your houseplants as quickly as possible. So I made this cutie little Plant Parent Personality Quiz that's totally free for you on my website to take the guesswork out of building your plant collection effortlessly and joyfully. After speaking to thousands of members in our community, I realized that there are about 5 key plant parent personalities, each one with their unique set of strengths, weaknesses, and a unique set of plants that thrive under their care. For example, a mindful plant parent, someone who wants to engage with their plants daily, use them in their morning routines. If someone gifted that plant parent a succulent and they watered it every day, that succulent would die immediately. However, That drought-resistant succulent is a perfect match for a low-key plant parent, which is someone who travels, has kids, is busy, doesn't have time to engage with their plants every day. They're looking to engage with their plants more like once a week or once every couple of weeks. In addition, obviously, to understanding your light and basic plant care that we provide on this podcast, Happy Plant Parenthood is all about discovering your personality and then picking the right houseplants to go with it. It's that simple. No more stressing over your collection. So what plant parent personality type are you, plant friend? All you got to do to find out is take my free quiz on my website and let me know. You can access it at growingjoywithmaria.com/personality. After taking the test, you'll get an email with a list of plants, podcast episodes, and planty projects that I think would light you specifically up like a full spectrum grow light. So once again, that's growingjoywithmaria.com/personality for your free plant parent personality test results. What about coffee grounds? What about eggshells?
Eggshells. So this is the one where I have to walk on eggshells because somebody will tell me a story. And that story will be something to the effect of my grandmama, granddaddy, my great aunt, the woman who saved me from the fire in the orphanage. She
puts eggshells in her house. And we support that for her. We support her doing this. It's fine.
An orphan in each hand, and she spread the eggshells, and she was such a good person, Derek. And that's why I use it. And my thing is, I get it. But we have to, again, consider the science of it all. So eggshells are calcium bicarbonate. And that is a beautiful thing when you are trying to use in your garden, because that can be broken down into a calcium amendment for your plants. Usually, before we start doing like the coffee grounds, or which is nitrogen, right? Or the eggshells, which is calcium. My question is, did your plants need that? Are you showing any signs that say, hey, I need calcium? You'll usually see that more in outdoor plants, which are in the nightshade family, like potatoes, tomatoes, bell peppers, and eggplants, versus the indoor plant. You may not see a calcium need because usually they're not, again, being in an environment that's causing them to use nutrition that quickly in the first place, unless you're growing, again, in not a hobbyist situation. The second thing is, when you crush them down, even if you crush them down into the finest powder you can get, it will take up to a year at least for that calcium in that solid form to then be translated into a form that is acceptable by the plants. Again, we're thinking about it as a dormant or me trying to get into your house. The calcium is trying to get into the house of your roots. It's going to take it a year in the powder form to find the key. Now imagine you have to sit there, and if it was a Pixar movie, we would love it. We'd watch it for a couple of hours and this would be beautiful. But in the real world outside, that calcium didn't touch your plants that whole growing season. And inside especially, it's going to be even longer because you don't have all the outdoor influences. So typically, I will tell the people, do the liquid way, where you take, I believe, a teaspoon of the powder of an eggshell for every teaspoon or tablespoon. It's a 1-to-1 ratio of eggshell to vinegar, white vinegar. You mix them together. It makes this bubbling and foaming thing because calcium bicarbonate is basic. You're adding it into an acidic situation, a base and an acid put together. Makes a salt plus water. So you're getting a salt of calcium. This isn't a salt like Morton's, but this is a fertilizer salt. And that salt can then be diluted with water and then given to your plants. But again, if your plants are looking beautiful.
Right. If they don't have a calcium deficiency, you don't need to do this.
You don't need to do it. Leave them alone.
Right. And most of your houseplants don't have a calcium deficiency. Like, if you're putting them in normal potting mix, like, they're probably fine. Okay, this is the one that hurts my heart.
Oh, God, don't hurt my heart.
And this is the one that I get so much pushback on. Well, my grandma does this. Once again, great. I totally support this for your grandma.
Oh, God.
Watering plants with ice cubes.
Oh, and, my you know, heart.
We just co-hosted at the House of Plants by Costa Farms at Seattle Northwest Flower and Garden Show. And I was surprised. So we both, you know, the structure of this was each of us had a day that we hosted the House of Plants and we had four different sessions and it was AMAs. So I got the ice cube question multiple times. Like, this is something that people still really think that you're supposed to do with your orchids specifically and then with your plants. So can we do this? Should we be doing this? Is this fake news?
is big fake news, big COVID fake. When it comes to that, number one, I'm surprised they asked you that because I got more people asking us about the moisture meters. That's what me and Justin got on Monday. So the fact that you got ice, I'm glad they asked you that because I would have passed out. When it comes to this, the reason they do it is I'm convinced there is a scam, a scheme afoot that Big Orchid, it's a scheme. Big Orchid doesn't want you to keep your orchids for too long. So they tell you to water them with ice because you're taking a plant that's tropical, that grows in the rainforest. It's an epiphytic plant, a plant that grows on to something else, right? And you are taking that plant and you are subjecting it to many shocks of a cold, frigid temperature, because the temperature directly around that plant, if you can envision it, I talk with my hands a lot to explain science, is just cold. So it's going to be cold temporarily, but it's going to be cold. And over time, that can end up negatively impacting your orchids. Now, why do they tell you to do this? Because orchids are epiphytes and they're typically in the rainforest to get attached to some tree, some plant, and they're just thriving off of the heavily humid space that they are in. So they don't need a lot of consistent water, but they do need to be relatively moist. And ice melting over time can kind of help that. I have iced plants in my past, but I no longer do that. So what do you do? Number one, and you get yourself, you look yourself in the mirror and you say, we don't ice plants anymore. Insert your first name. You say that in the mirror. You say, I ice cakes. I don't ice plants. That's what you say. Okay. Now, after you do that, go from the mirror. You get a good clean spray bottle. You can just mist them. Some orchids I have, they're growing in different media. I got three in here, a vanilla orchid and two other orchids I can't remember the name of right now. And I just water them regularly, but I also have them in an environment where they are able to be hot and humid. So I water them weekly. They get a nice soak and then they dry from there. In a non-environment, not like this botanist is doing, I would check the soil. You check with your finger, two nubs, one, two, go down into the soil. When you go into that soil, if it's like getting dry, you give it a light watering. And again, with a spray bottle, you give it a light mist. There's a light spritz. For orchids specifically, you can mist some aeroids, things that are like your philodendrons, your monasteras, your rhizophora. There are other plants that really do like humidity, depending on your space, but it's depending on your environment. What I do here in North Carolina is going to be different than what Maria does in Florida, because she's better than the rest of us, because she could just go outside and throw her houseplants outside and they're going to be great unless a hurricane comes, okay? They're going to be gigantic things taking over her yard. Me in North Carolina, I got to fight. But if you were in Arizona, that's different because it's a drier environment. So all of these things, you have to consider your environment. We're very humid here, so I don't mist as often as I used to, and I boil water every so often. But for those of you who may be in drier areas or in drier homes, again, a little mist and just a light mist. We're not trying to just make a bunch of water mist onto the plant. We're not trying to like douse it like we're doing the ice bucket challenge, but we're just trying to say a little light spritz and leave it be.
I love it. But yeah, back to that ice cube thing. Like, once again, all we have to do is like do our best to simplify, to recreate, you know, the outdoor environment. Normal water with no bananas in it at a normal temperature, thinking about these tropical plants that live in the rainforest, but where it's 90 degrees, 80% humidity, like they are not used to freezing water on their sweet little roots. So yeah, but I agree with you, Derek. I think Big Orchid created that whole ice cube thing as a way to keep us buying more and more orchids. All right. How much do we love Derek? So you can find Derek at The Chocolate Botanist. All of his links are in the show notes. But yeah, be wary. I mean, I hope that Derek and I brought as much love and an open heart to this conversation as possible. But be wary when you look for plant care advice on the internet, you know, when you're looking for creators to follow on the internet to learn from, see if they've taken plant science courses, see if they're a botanist, see if they've studied. See if they know what they're talking about. Look at what their collection looks like. Because once again, like I said in the beginning of today's episode, it breaks my heart when people earnestly show up to the internet trying to get answers to their problems and they're not answered. They're actually just made worse. And that's why I've created this podcast, Growing Joy with Plants, that has 300 episodes of vetted information for you. All of my guests are vetted and so smart. And all of these efforts of this podcast and YouTube and social media is to set everyone up for success. So everybody can care for plants successfully and continue to grow joy. Plant friend, thank you for tuning in today. It means so much to me that I get to be part of your planty journey. If you like what you heard, make sure you're subscribed to the show so you never miss an episode. We have so many incredible interviews and solo episodes on incredible houseplant and gardening topics that you will not want to miss this year. And while you're over there in the podcast player subscribing, why don't you click over to the review section of Growing Joy with Plants and leave us a review? Reviews are tremendously helpful for the growth of the podcast, so thanks in advance. If you're looking for more opportunities to grow as a plant parent with Growing Joy content, we've got so many options for you. First, I highly recommend you taking the Plant Parent Personality Test. It's free. It's super fun. It takes 3 minutes to complete. At the end of the test, you're going to get your plant parent personality profile and a curated list of plants, projects, and podcast episodes that are right up your alley, tailored just for you and your lifestyle, inspired by your results. The links are in the show notes. If you're looking to uplevel your plant parent game, I have so many free downloads on my website that I think could help you, like the Understanding Natural Light download or 9 different ways to green up your office space. If you'd like to support the show monetarily and help me bring the show to as many people as possible for free, you can head to our Patreon link in the show notes to learn more about our offerings. And finally, I invite you to come hang out with me and continue the planty conversation on social media, on Instagram and TikTok. I'm Growing Joy with Maria. My DMs are always open if you have requests for topics or ideas for the show. Thank you again for listening. It is truly my honor and delight to help you keep blooming and keep growing joy. Hot take, plant friends. There is no one right starter plant. There, I said it. And you know what? While I'm at it, there are also no real plant killers in the world. There are just people who have not figured out their right plants for their lifestyle. This is why I created the free Plant Parent Personality Test, because plant friend, I want you to get thriving alongside your houseplants as quickly as possible. So I made this cutie little plant parent personality quiz that's totally free for you on my website to take the guesswork out of building your plant collection effortlessly and joyfully. After speaking to thousands of members in our community, I realized that there are about 5 key plant parent personalities, each one with their unique set of strengths, weaknesses, and a unique set of plants that thrive under their care. For example, a mindful plant parent, someone who wants to engage with their plants daily, use them in their morning routines. If someone gifted that plant parent a succulent and they watered it every day, that succulent would die immediately. However, that drought-resistant succulent is a perfect match for a low-key plant parent, which is someone who travels, has kids, is busy, doesn't have time to engage with their plants every day. They're looking to engage with their plants more like once a week or once every couple of weeks. In addition, obviously, to understanding your light and basic plant care that we provide on this podcast, Happy Plant Parenthood is all about discovering your personality and then picking the right houseplants to go with it. It's that simple. No more stressing over your collection. So what plant parent personality type are you, plant friend? All you got to do to find out is take my free quiz on my website and let me know. You can access it at growingjoywithmaria.com/personality. After taking the test, you'll get an email with a list of plants, podcast episodes, and planty projects that I think would light you specifically up like a full spectrum grow light. So once again, that's growingjoywithmaria.com/personality for your free plant parent personality test results.